Okay, getting into recruitment, like we said, for our productivity indices, we can do that with both juvenile and adult razor clams. Juveniles, because we're skipping that mini stage, we're using the first cohort that we can fully detect at these beaches to assess it. So there's a little bit of lag time here from the year that they settle onto the beach and then when we can fully detect them in our abundance survey. You can see that in Nanilchik, it's highly variable. Between years, you can have a 10 or 12 fold increase from one year to the next. And there can also be really large recruitments at Nanilchik. And then also looking at some year like 2019 that Holly just highlighted for us, you can see that there can be really big differences in recruitments in a year between Nanilchik and Clam Gulch beaches. Okay, adult recruitment, I said we're getting that from the clams going from the juvenile life stage to adults. And that's based on those new adult abundances. So you can see for Nanilchik South 2016 how low it actually was, how few adult razor clams recruited to the adult size. Overall, in 2020 is probably the best year that we've had since the closure. The number of adult recruits at Nanilchik and mostly Nanilchik, but a little bit of Clam Gulch improved to where the adult abundances actually went up. So it's a good sign, but overall, this adult recruitment is not sufficient enough to compensate for the natural mortality rates, let alone be enough to provide room for harvest over top of that.
So I think there's a couple other things. The historical data isn't up here, but if we had it up, you'd be able to see that historically at Clam Gulch, for every razor clam that was harvested in the fishery, there was 10 to 20 razor clams that recruited to the beach each year. So at that point, there was recruitment sufficient to replace natural mortality and harvest. Nanilchik behaved a little differently. It didn't have consistent recruitment every year. It had more of these large pulses every 2 to 4 years. And just the other thing, it had really great juvenile recruitment in 2018, and that lines up with the same year, that the natural mortality was really good on both beaches. So it just kind of points at some sort of environmental condition or variable that's or variables, likely plural, that are, lining up and are favorable to the razor clams in multiple different ways. Okay, so real quick, the one of our last productivity indices or ways that we, kind of look at the health of these razor clam stocks is the length composition of them and their age compositions. The average length of the razor clams in different year brackets there for the two beaches. If we had this up to show it annually, it'd show the average length really stayed pretty consistent until 2005. And then in 2005, it suddenly dropped off and declined. Since then, it's continued to decline. Even since the fishery closed in 2015, it's declined further since then. So, now this most recent 5-year period, the average length of these clams, if you go and hand dig them or in our hand dug samples, are 83 and 73 millimeters. So, that at Clam Gulch is actually the average size is under what we would say is an adult clam or a harvestable size clam. For reference, 80 millimeters is about 3 inches. And the historical size, average size of about 120 millimeters would have been about 5 inches. Okay, and the age composition of razor clams on the Nanilchik beach. So in 1991, the most prevalent age class at Nanilchik were 3-year-olds. You go to the next year, 1992, you see the large bubble move up one age there. So the following year, it was, the most prevalent age were 4-year-olds. So that's what I was talking about when I said there was large recruitments of clams at Nanilchik every 2 to 4 years. You can see those cohorts moving through this consistently. And they're really carrying the fishery over that time. The maximum age of the clams right up until 2005. So even through 2005, we had clams that were greater than 10 years old. You can see some up there at 13, 14, or 15 years old. And then since then, those clams have completely disappeared. So we're getting, you know, a maximum age of 7 or in some years, 8-year-old clams, but there's very few of them. That, you know, Mike was talking about this a bit, but if we can kind of tell what our historical natural mortality rates were by looking at this. So, you know, we look at a group of clams and a certain number, and they're experiencing natural mortality rates now of 50 to 75%, and they don't get any older than 7 years old because they die before they get to that age. And you look back and take the same number of clams, and they were reaching maximum ages of 13, 14, or 15 years old. You have to assume their natural mortality rate was more like 20 or 30% at the most.
I think some important things to think about with this data, you know, it's not as rigorous as the abundance data that we have, but our abundance survey are on really small beach portions of the overall East Cook Inlet beach. Age, size and age compositions are collected from 10 different beaches across all of East Cook Inlet. And this same pattern that you see at Nanilchik beaches has happened at all of the beaches, which helps us understand that this decline or changes or shifts in age composition happened regardless of harvest rate. So we've shown you the one from the Nanilchik beaches where they were likely harvested at the highest rate, but the beaches in between Nanilchik and Clam Gulch that were lightly harvested, where diggers rarely went, this same pattern emerges. And so this data has been really good at helping us understand the impact or potential impact of harvest over time. It's something we'll continue to do even with the fishery closed, because it gives us just, you know, a couple more productivity indices. Okay, and so when you take age and length and put them together, you can look at the growth of razor clams. And we've spent a lot of time, and a lot of managers and researchers have tried to, you know, really get a handle on growth for razor clams in East Cook Inlet. What we've done recently is shift from size at age data to producing annual growth increments by age. And what we find is that annual growth is pretty variable from year to year. And really interestingly, in the most recent years, particularly 17 and 18, we see that there's a historical low average growth at both Nanilchik and Clam Gulch, unprecedented poor growth. The growth of two-year-olds in 17 and 18 were closer to the average growth of the 2 to 3. So these shifts in smaller sizes has an impact on clams.
The percent of three-year-old clams at Nanilchik and four-year-old clams at Clam Gulch that reached adult size at that age. So you can see over time it was variable, but in general, most clams reached adult size at age 3 or 4 on their respective beaches. Of course, you see the exception with a couple years of extremely poor growth in the early 2000s. And then you see that that's happened again with the cohorts since 2011. We've declined from, you know, an average of 70% of the clams making it to the adult size at that age to 0% making it.
We've taken these 9 productivity indices for both Nanilchik and Clam Gulch and have developed a qualitative assessment based on each productivity indice compared to its historical averages. And so they're kind of color-coded. You know, if things were really good at Nanilchik, you'd mostly see some greens and yellows. In juvenile clams, you see kind of a spattering there. And then, you know, you look at Clam Gulch here, you can see actually that juvenile clams are mostly greens and yellows. Things have improved there for juvenile clams, but adult clams are mostly these reds. So things haven't really improved there. And the age and length data show you some differences there. But I think these report cards are kind of a quick, easy way for us to look at them on a whole and compare them year to year, and how is growth shaping up to influence you know, the productivity of clams on these beaches compared to the other things. So anyways, when we get to all greens, we'll be in really good shape.
Okay, so to wrap up here, just to go over quickly what we're going to continue doing. We're continuing our annual abundance surveys at our three primary beaches, so the two Nanulchik beaches and Clam Gulch North. We're continuing our habitat assessment. One thing we're doing is we had a digital elevation model of the beaches made, so you can, you know, go out and see where the negative one tide level is or the negative two tide level on the sand. So we hope to post-stratify our abundance estimates by elevation rather than by those beach strips or strata or in addition to it. We'll continue to do our age and length surveys, keep that data set going. If the fishery reopens, we'll be doing harvest monitoring. So we'll be on the beach counting diggers and we'll be there conducting interviews as they leave the beach and counting clams in their buckets. And of course, we'll continue our many collaborations, APU Fast Lab being the primary one involved in many of these, and many other great partners too to help with some of this other stuff.
Okay, and then to wrap up, just the potential for a future fishery, I think with looking at, you know, doing this stock assessment for East Cook Inlet raisers and assessing how productive it is with those indices, one thing that you really notice in the data is that the productivity is not the same at Nanulchik and Clam Gulch. They're very, very distinct in many ways. And so what we've done as a department is we've submitted a proposal to the Alaska Board of Fish to establish a management plan for East Cook Inlet raisers, dividing the total beach into two management areas. And with those two areas being managed with the data from Clam Gulch for the Clam Gulch area and Nanulchik for the Nanulchik area, this management plan proposal is available for review right now on the Alaska Board of Fish website. It's proposal number 257. It was supposed to be deliberated on at a meeting in March, but delayed due to COVID. And so public comment is available to submit online. I would encourage everyone that's interested or has an opinion on how the fishery should be structured should be providing comment with this one. The management plan proposal as we have it drafted, if it was adopted, establishes abundance thresholds for both a limited harvest opportunity as this stock continues to rebuild and abundance thresholds for the historical fishery. It also uses those productivity indices that we walked you through for triggers within these fisheries. It also establishes harvest rates for the limited fishery and for the historical fishery. And we took a shot at the length of a season and a bag limit for the more limited fishery. Hopefully we have a couple minutes here for questions.
Yes. So I'll just talk about some of them. I think you've answered some of these. The first question from an Elizabeth was, what is the average age of a raiser clam? I think you answered that, and it seems to be dropping, right?
Yeah, I think overall, I mean, historically, the average age was probably 7 or 8 years old when the stock was really productive. Right now, it's probably 4 or 5 years old.
And then I had three comments / questions on this concept. And the idea was, Mike asked, any idea what the sampling related or caused mortality might be? So I'll leave it at that because some other people commented back, but we'd like to hear from you.
Yeah, that's a great question. Sorry that we didn't say along the way, one little detail, try to cram so much information into a very short amount of time. But the sampling with the water pump, you know, to emulsify the substrate is very passive. Almost all the clams survive. If we bump into them with the wand, sometimes there's breakage and loss. But after we're done measuring and aging the clams, they go back into the plot and most of them rebury themselves and are gone in very short order.
And that doesn't harm them in any way?
No, I mean, that's one thing with raiser clams. I mean, I think they're kind of used to being able to, you know, kind of be evicted from their home and get back to it as fast as they can. To watch a razor clam rebury itself, it's a pretty quick process. you know, for shellfish, they can move.
Diane says, as if time allows, could you talk about the number of clam diggers and how that has increased over the years as well? Certainly, I've seen many more people harvesting prior to the, I think this is prior to the closure, prior to the natural disaster, and can't help but think over harvesting is a problem.
I mean, I think the size and age composition, you know, I talked about how, you know, we have assessed the potential impact of the fishery historically within that size and age composition data, right? That we saw this shift in age and size on all beaches, regardless of harvest level. So that's important. Holly also mentioned historically in the years that we had the periodic abundance survey or estimates for the Clam Gulch beaches, that the harvest in those years, as we compared it to the recruitment that we got 10 to 20 new clams at Clam Gulch every year for every clam that was harvested. And so it's very unlikely that harvest had any influence on razor clams at Clam Gulch. Nanilchik is a little bit different, and it's based on that the recruitment thing, that it was more palsy. We got really large recruitments every 2 to 4 years. And so when you look at that, you had cohorts carrying the fishery over the years that you didn't get any recruitment. But overall, that harvest was very sustainable, continued to get new clams all the time. You know, the fishery as it declined, I think what you're seeing is a shift and change in productivity. The conditions became less and less favorable for Cook Inlet or East Cook Inlet razor clams to persist. And so just a recap here on when the fishery really peaked and what we have for effort data, you can see, you know, that the fishery peaked for effort in the mid 90s. And razor clams persisted for a really long time, many generations after that, before we really started to see declines. I think, interestingly, when we saw the harvest and effort start to decline in the mid-2000s, I think that was a combination of an overall decline in sport fishing effort down here on the Kenai Peninsula, and that the size and age composition was starting to shift. You know, we were seeing fewer larger clams, and so I think people went less frequently.
Nicole asks, it looks like some of the partnerships reference microplastics and disease. Are these possible factors in the natural mortality?
Thank you so much for asking that question. We'd love to have talked more about our collaborations. We just didn't have time. Yeah, I think those collaborations are a good starting point for trying to figure out these other sources of mortality. What we found is no, the large scale effects that you would see with these changes, those things are not really contributing to it for a quick answer to it. And we've done those things or those comparisons from East to West Cook Inlet, where we feel razor clam productivity is still pretty darn good in the same place. And so large scale pollution's not a problem. Disease does not seem to be a problem. Yes, microplastics are prevalent, but way less so than in razor clams that you see on the Oregon and Washington coast, where razor clams are really prolific right now.
And I will just add to her question, out of curiosity, is there any research going on ocean acidification and its effect on the carbonate levels?
Actually, yes, with razor clams, there's a graduate or a PhD student at Fairbanks, UAF, right now that is looking at the effects of OA on shell development on razor clams, working with the Aleutic Pride hatchery in Seward, and then looking at ocean acidification, water conditions in Catchmac Bay.
And then how does the east side fishery compare? I hear this a lot too, because those stocks are still healthy.
First thing to know, the differences between East Cook Inlet and West Cook Inlet. East Cook Inlet from anchor point to the Kasiloff River is generally a 50-mile skinny long section of intertidal sandy beach, right? That's razor clam habitat. In West Cook Inlet, when we say West Cook Inlet, we're generally referring to Polly Creek and Crescent River Bar area. There's a really large commercial fishery that's occurred over there since the early 1900s. But that beach is only 19 miles long, but it's so wide that it's six times bigger than the amount of clam habitat that's in East Cook Inlet. So that's just one part of West Cook Inlet. There are razor clam distribution in West Cook Inlet isn't known perfectly, but it's not continuous like it is in East Cook Inlet, you know, based on the habitat, but it does go all the way to Kamishak Bay. So there are many places in West Cook Inlet where there's razor clams. The work for Polly Creek and Crescent River Bar is, because it's primarily a commercially harvested stock, you know, the data that we have is associated with that fishery. For those of you that don't know, the commercial fishery in West Cook Inlet harvests up to 400,000 pounds of razor clams annually based on the size and age data that we have to go along with that. That's somewhere between 750,000 and 1.5 million razor clams. So on that one beach, the harvest that's occurring there just in the commercial fishery is greater than what Holly showed you on this timeline figure that's still up here. Wow. West Cook Inlet, we've, in the process of seeing the decline on this side, we've also started to collect the size and age data at several beaches over there annually, just to give us, you know, to kind of start to develop that primary data set, you know, that we've had over here for a long time. I think that's really important. Assessing abundance, we really need to lean on commercial fish staff to do that and get after it. The commercial fishery has been really productive. There are some signs that it's not quite as productive as it was in recent years, but there are still a tremendous amount of razor clams in West Cook Inlet right now. The digging, for those that are missing their digging on the east side, I would encourage you to try to get to the west side and experience it. It's a great, great trip. My two cents of West Cook Inlet is, it's hard for me to imagine East Cook Inlet ever being as productive as West Cook Inlet is even right now. It's amazing how many razor clams are there and the size of them. It's a really unique and totally different thing. And just based on the currents in Cook Inlet, you know, current by the time you get to Ninilchik is running pretty much straight up and down. You know, we don't get currents going from East and West Cook Inlet. So we do feel like mostly that these are separate stocks, even though we don't know, you know, the biological mechanisms that replace clams in East and West Cook Inlet. These are pretty separated.
Is there a way to check food sources for the clams? Is the water they filter for food less nutrient packed now than in the past? That goes to, is that something else that's being looked at?
Great question, Marie. Yeah, for sure. You know, razor clams, not to discredit them as, you know, being really cool animals, but they're pretty basic feeders, right? They siphon water to get their food. And so they primarily are filter feeders of phytoplankton. And so I think these growth differences, we didn't get into all of that. And I'm going to be doing a presentation at the Kachemak Bay Science Conference on just the razor clam growth stuff. So if you're really interested in the growth stuff, I'd say try to catch that. But yeah, it's apparent that the primary productivity in 17 and 18 in East Cook Inlet was well below what it's been historically. I mean, there's just no two ways around it. Water temperatures were not that much different. And so, yeah, I think that the food source of clams is phytoplankton, and that's pretty variable in how it's been and definitely different than the past. We've done a little bit of gut analyses looking at razor clams with an undergrad senior project at APU, and that was fascinating. Just, you know, collected clams from all of our hand-dug beaches in a couple of days, and how different the taxa composition and the amount were present in these razor clams at beaches. Even Nanilchik South to Nanilchik North were very, very different taxa compositions in the guts collected on the same day. So yeah, there's some really small scale things going on there that lead to, you know, the overall growth or the potential of these clams to grow. So I would even go on a limb and say it probably even is different even within a beach for where they're located, if they're closer to the gravel line or out farther to the water line, though we don't really see it in the abundance survey data. I think it's a potential.
That was Mike Booz and Holly Dixon, Lower Cook Inlet Area Management Biologists with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game Sport Fish Division, talking about East Cook Inlet razor clams. You can find that entire presentation on the Alaska Wildlife Alliance's Facebook page. Mike is going to be giving another presentation at the Ketchumak Bay Science Conference, March 15th through the 18th. That is going to be presented online, and it's open to the public. Check it out at Ketchumak Bay Science Conference on Facebook. You were tuned to listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL, Kenai Soldotna, 91.9 FM.